Today's episode of The Mom Game is brought to you by our friends at Gateway Buick GMC at LBJ and Jupiter. I know that buying a car can be stressful, but not at Gateway because their slogan is Gateway's Got It. And just what does that mean? Well, it means Gateway's got a wide selection of new Buicks, GMCs, and GM-certified used vehicles, all competitively priced. Gateway's got it. In these busy times, you want a car dealer who makes things easy and convenient. Well, guess what? Gateway's got it. When you log on to gatewaybuickgmc.com, look for the Shop, Click, Drive button. This allows you to shop from the comfort of your home, and who doesn't want that? In fact, it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. 1, select your vehicle. 2, create your offer. 3, schedule your delivery. And on top of all this, Gateway Buick GMC offers complimentary car washes for life. So, when you want a dealer who has it all, Gateway's got it. You can find them online at gatewaybuickgmc.com or shop in person at LBJ and Jupiter. GMC, we are professional grade. Experience the new Buick. And welcome inside the Coppola Studios for episode 212 of The Mom Game. I'm Emily Jones. There is no Julie Dobbs. She abandoned us all to be on a beach in Cabo somewhere. So good for her. Slightly jealous, but I do have my dear friend and Rangers expert, my Rangers expert, Jared Sandler, with me today. What's up?
What's up, Holmes? I feel
finally. How does it feel?
Well, your
moment is here.
It took me winning my third straight Mom of the Year award to finally get my due recognition as a mom.
Yes, for sure. But we're not just moms, and we're not just sports.
Right.
Here at the Mom Game,
we're everything. And we're Gateway's got it.
Show. Gateway's got it.
Do you know that my wife, who is also named Emily, as you know, if she ever sees you on TV, for Ranger stuff, she will say, Gateway's got it. We were talking about cars because Nana's in the market for a car, and I made some comment or asked a question I wonder if whatever, and her response was, well, you know where she can go for that. And I was like, where? She's like, Gateway, because Gateway's got it.
Okay, it's working.
Yeah.
Charles, you hear that? It's working. All of this marketing and using me as a pitch woman is definitely working.
They need to pay you double.
Thank you. I completely agree with that. But you know what? They do. They're such great supporters of the Do It for Dirt Foundation.
Oh, I know. They're all over the place.
They are. Yeah. We're so grateful for them. We're so grateful for Coppola. For being a sponsor. You are free to take that home too.
Oh.
You and Emily can share that for a little parting gift. Thankful to Geico for sponsoring our mic flags. My friend Victoria and her big old local Geico office. She's all over the place. So yeah, super thankful for our sponsors here on the Mom Game. I'm having a day, Jared, because I'm forgetting all kinds of shit. So what better way to get my mind right than just to crack open a bottle of this. So I'm going to open some.
I'm jealous.
Prosecco Rosé. Well, I mean, you can take a pull off the bottle if you want.
Yeah,
I can bring you a glass because you want one.
Yeah, so I've got a Rangers broadcast in a little bit.
Yeah.
So just before, I don't want anyone to think I'm making you drink alone. That seems very
rude. Yeah.
Here's what's going to happen is, someone's going to geotag something or another or whatever. They're gonna figure out they're gonna figure out when we're doing this, and then they're gonna do the math and say he was drinking wine hours before he had to go on air.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna get a lecture, and that's not gonna go well.
Yeah,
are you doing fun. Do you need help? Are you?
Yeah, I got it. Yeah,
it was a nice sound effect.
Thanks. I mean, I'm just gonna have a little glass.
You should have as much as you want.
Well, I mean, I'm driving, so it's not smart to have a bunch.
Yes,
very responsibly. So I'm just gonna have a little this to get my head right, because you know what happened to me today? I forgot a lunch, completely dropped the ball. My bosses with the Rangers, just supposed to meet them for lunch and completely forgot. This was after I heckled you about what time we were shooting this show today. I don't know what is wrong with me. And I told you this the night it happened. So I knocked the whiz out of the back of my head making bunk beds. Remember when
It
hurts so effing bad. And now I'm thinking, what if I do have some sort of concussion? Is this possible? Where I'm not, it's like I'm just not putting things together. Like, I'm just not, things aren't adding up in my brain right now.
You've also had, I don't even know what your kids' schedules have been.
Yeah,
it's something. But opening weekend's pretty chaotic.
It is.
Right? There's a lot to balance there. You're working with a new analyst for the first time. You got new people all around you. You've got the pomp and circumstance of the ring ceremony and this and that. So I think you should give yourself some grace, okay. Right?
Well, I appreciate that. I'm glad someone's giving me grace.
Plus, your daughter, who's a rock star, spent $20 on a claw toy machine in Arizona, which, like, if you can overcome that as a mom, I feel like you can overcome anything.
I know. But I just don't know. Like, I don't, like I said, I just wonder if, is there something to that, that maybe I did concuss myself? What are the symptoms? Like,
I do worry now that, like, concussions are way more prevalent and more readily diagnosed, or people are more willing to diagnose them. I wonder how many I wonder how many like, I was the youngest brother of three. I got thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
I had to have had some concussions when I was growing up. I ran into walls. Right? I don't know. But, like, you can still function if it's a mild concussion.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I've ever had a concussion.
So then should we really spin this as, wow, Emily Jones.
I'm fighting through this.
She, what a warrior.
Yep.
She did two games post-concussion.
No, just one game.
Yeah, just one. Yeah.
It was in between one.
But your best game yet, I heard, was your best of the two so far.
Yeah.
And
that's what a lot of people are talking about.
Yeah. Well, they're also saying that there's the Jordan flu game. There's Corey Seager playing through his injuries last year.
And then there's me.
And then there's Emily Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's heady company, but I'll take it.
It's pretty impressive.
So here we are. Julie's on vacation. She's on a beach. I'm playing through a concussion while sipping on a glass of Coppola Rosé Prosecco or whatever. So I feel like it's obvious. It should be obvious to everyone who's committed to the mom game and, you know, who really, you know, thinks about our listeners and our viewers and wants to be here for them. So, I mean, well, you know, hopefully Julie will come back around and show her commitment to the mom game. But
yeah,
right,
really
now,
slacking.
I'm having to carry this thing.
Yeah. Also, I feel like medically speaking, if you did have a concussion, the wine probably not the best choice.
Okay. All right. Noted.
But I think that's also what adds to the mystique of of Emily
Jones.
Yeah, right.
I mean, can't just have a concussion.
No. You got to really.
Yeah,
you got to build the adversity
for sure.
The hill's got to be super steep.
Yeah.
Who's the old myth? The ball that rolls up.
And remember Banny had that in his office.
Yeah.
Jeff Bannister had that in his office. It's some dude pushing a boulder up a hill, a mountain or something. Socrates.
I was going to say like Oedipus, but that doesn't sound right.
Oedipus.
And then I thought about orifice, but that is not a person.
That's like an opening in your body.
Yep.
Weird.
Fellow.
Apostle.
Sisyphus.
Sisyphus, which, if said incorrectly, would take you down a different path.
Not to be confused with syphilis.
Yes.
There's a lot of different ways we could go here. But yeah, I am Sisyphus today. I am fighting through all the things, and hopefully I'll still have a job next week when the Rangers come back in town. But Jared, I'm excited you're here with us. We're going to talk a lot of Rangers. We're also just going to talk a lot of random stuff, which we've already gotten a really good head start on. But first, let's dig into a little bit to your background, how you got here. You grew up here. You're a Jesuit kid.
Green Hill.
Sorry. Green Hill, is that offensive? Is that?
Maybe to you? Jesuit.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, maybe to them. I don't know. Yeah. So
you're a Green Hill kid.
Green Hill kid, yeah.
I didn't know Green Hill had high school.
What? Yeah, Green Hill is like preschool all the way through 12th grade.
So you were there the whole time?
No, I went to another preppy private school before.
Okay.
I went to
so
St. Mark's. Yeah.
So bougie.
I went to St. Mark's for 4 years and then Green Hill. Financial aid, though, right? I was not, I wasn't, I, my first car, So the Green Hill parking lot.
I love how you want to put that out there.
I need no because I need to build my.
Like, I'm not rich.
I need to build my adversity, right? Okay. I need to show that I was Sisyphus at one point.
Private school K through 12 isn't exactly.
Let's forget that I went to USC afterwards.
Oh,
another.
My God.
So, but I will tell you that I'm sure the St. Mark's parking lot was very similar at 16 years old when I got my car, and I was very thankful to get a car at 16. I was surrounded by Escalades, BMWs, cars I'd never even heard of that had price tags that were like unfathomable. And then here I am. I got my used Nissan Sentra.
Nice.
With the what do you call it? The windows,
roll down.
The roll down windows. Yeah. I was pretty fired up. Had that for 10 years.
Whoa.
10 years. Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah.
My first car was a two-toned Chevy Silverado pickup.
Okay.
It was gray and kind of a light blue. It was sweet.
Like custom paint job?
No. It was the way it came. It was a hand-me-down from my dad.
Got it.
But I will tell you, there was these bumps. I think the street was called Ennis in Plainview. And we would catch so much air. That was like the favorite thing. Totally unsafe. We'd load a bunch of people up in the back of the bed of the pickup truck and go on like joyrides down Ennis and see how high they could go. What could possibly go wrong there?
It seems like a perfectly
normal
activity.
And then now I'm
activity.
So much more mature, you know, 30 years later, where I'm getting a concussion and having a glass of Prosecco. So anyway.
Well, bailing on lunch with your bosses.
Bailing on lunch with my bosses.
Like, if you were to bail on lunch with anyone, your bosses are at the top of the list.
And did I tell you, was this on air or off air? I felt like such an asshole because I didn't even, I couldn't even say like, because I was already 30 minutes late to the lunch by the time Angie texted me. And then I'm like, I still haven't showered. I don't shower until the last possible minute. So if I have to leave the house at 1, I don't have to put on makeup. I'm showering at 12:45. So I was about to jump in the shower. So I couldn't even say like, oh my gosh, I'll be right there. I'm 25 minutes away from the ballpark. I've got to shower. So it was just a lot. I was a totally lost cause. I just felt awful.
Well, that's what you just said on air. Off air, you said that you had no intention.
But
you told me you had no intention of ever showing up to it.
That
you intentionally left them hanging.
I never said that.
I thought that's what I remember hearing, but I could be wrong.
But did I just say that on the air twice? This is where my mind is.
Yeah. Now I'm really considering taking this wine away from you.
I know. No, and this is, I mean, I don't know. Okay. Where were we going?
You're asking about me
being bougie,
yeah.
And going
grew up in
Mark's
Dallas.
Green Hill, went to USC.
St. Mark's, Green Hill, USC.
rough life.
Really, it was really rough. Financial aid at USC. And
you were on the baseball team and
I went there. So I did, I feel like everyone says this. I could have played at like a small school out of college, right? There are a few.
Sure.
Dickinson was the school that I probably most closely considered or that was the, you know, if I would have gone that route, it's over in the East Coast. But like, I wasn't playing professional baseball. I knew that.
Yeah.
And so when I was considering the schools I wanted to go to, I actually didn't get into the schools. Like, I wanted to go to Northwestern, didn't get in. Wanted to go to North Carolina, didn't get in. Yale, didn't get in. Syracuse, I got in, but not to their journalism program. So I wasn't going to go to upstate New York for nothing.
Yeah.
And I got into Missouri, and that's where for the longest time I was going to go to Missouri. But
that's where Julie went.
Yeah. And I got to the point where I was like, all right, I can really like this, but the problem was that I was having to convince myself.
Yeah.
And so I ended up, like, I randomly applied to a few schools after I didn't get into a wave of schools, and USC was one of them. I knew nothing about USC other than Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush. Like, I didn't go. Maybe it's like this at all schools. At Green Hill, and I'm sure at St. Mark's, you got a lot of kids whose parents have been building their kids' resumes since they were, like, 4 years old, and these kids have it like implanted in their mind, the Princeton review rankings for all these colleges and this and that. I was like the antithesis of that. I knew college through the lens of a sports fan.
Yeah.
And like, obviously I knew Ivy League schools were good and whatnot, but so I applied to USC. I got in, I threw the acceptance packet in the back of my car. It was stuck underneath the driver's seat for probably a month. The lady who would have been my advisor at Mizzou was like, hey, you should actually consider USC based on the things you're telling me you're looking for. Just give them a call. So I gave someone who I guess what ended up being my advisor at USC a call, and turned out I was like, all right, yeah, this is absolutely where I should go. And then just for kicks, I reached out to the baseball program. Their head coach at the time was a guy named Chad Kruder, who played for the Rangers briefly. And there, I sent them my, you know, my, I think it was a DVD at the time. I mailed them my DVD, which is my recruiting tape. It was on a DVD. I don't know if I could play a DVD at this point in my life.
No, but that only to be trumped by the VHS tapes that I sent out. Yes.
And they basically said, hey, yeah, we like what we see. You're welcome to try walk on. And so I went through that process, and I was essentially, I made it deeper into the process than I should have, but I was basically Rudy. They looked at me as like the short kid who didn't belong, but worked hard and could do enough things decently to where they could justify like keeping me going. And at the time, you could redshirt as many people as you could redshirt 100 people. You just had to pay for 100 people and all the fees that come with it. So I thought, all right, I don't know what's going on. I met with Chad Kruder. He basically told me, yeah, you're never going to play, but we like having you around. And so then I had just gotten into broadcasting, and I was like, well, hey, I got this broadcasting thing that I think actually I might have a future in. I don't know. Is there a way to do both? And he said, well, he didn't tell me this. He basically ran the program into the ground administratively. He's like, I need help in the office,
right?
Logistics, recruiting, organization, help with practice. Would you be interested in that? And I said, yes. And so, I think my title was like undergraduate assistant coach, so that for NCAA compliance reasons, I could do certain things, but I wasn't like a coach. I wasn't telling my peers like, hey, you need to lift your elbow up in the, you know, whatever. But I just helped out. It was really cool. It ended up being an incredible experience for 4 years. It was the worst 4 seasons consecutively in USC baseball history. But other than that, it was great. And I was involved in just about everything with the program, from recruiting to operations to helping to run practice and stuff like that. It was really neat.
Okay, so is this where your like maniacal, you know, stuff comes from?
No, you can.
No, I mean, like, so, you know, you do the March Madness pool. And so I'm thinking like there's 50 of us, right? Like maybe, you know, filling out these brackets. So I go to check the standings, and my kids each filled out a bracket, and my husband, and we looked at them, like, I'm in like 278th place. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, how do you get 350 people to sign up for some ridiculous March Madness pool at $50 a pop? Somebody's going to walk away with a big fat payday, which is awesome. But how do you get 350 people to sign up for a fucking March Madness pool?
I will talk to anybody.
Right, this is true. And you will stay on everybody about everything. Like, yeah, just check until...
Yes. For better or for worse, I am type A to the extreme and very schedule-oriented. I am very organized. I wish I wasn't as rigid with certain things. But yeah, that's probably why. And I will say, like, in college, I had baseball, and that was probably the majority of my experience. I did join a fraternity... not sure why, but still have friends from there. Like, I have always found comfort in, maybe a part of it was like, I didn't know what my identity was growing up, but like, I was the guy who, I was friends with people in all sorts of different groups. And I guess, like, I think this stuff, I feel so superficial saying this. I guess if you were to look back, my main group of friends in high school was the quote unquote popular group, but I was the least cool kid in that group. Like, I don't know that I really belonged. I was good at sports. And so I think that's why I was friends with some of these guys.
Right.
But like, I've always related. I feel like I've been able to relate to different groups, but I've never been the guy, like, when you walk in a room, our partner, Dave Raymond, or our teammate, Dave Raymond.
Yeah.
I feel like Dave can walk in any situation, in any room, and he is going to be, he might not inward, like internally be comfortable, but he will project comfort, and his wittiness and enthusiasm and comedy will just always play. Like, I very well could be stuck
Dave's
in a corner.
Good singers.
Yeah.
Dave's got really good, he's got a great sense of humor. He's good like that.
But like, sure. some situations I'll be in the corner. You won't even know I'm there. Others, I feel really comfortable, and I don't know why or what. I don't even know how we're going down this path, but 350 people, I'll talk to anyone, and I feel like I'll go into a group, and I, in certain settings, I'm happy to just strike up conversation.
Right, and then same thing, but like you're very structured. Like this whole, you do it the home run thing.
The home run thing that we
the
do,
home
yep.
run yep. thing. And we get, so you're like, do you want to be a part of it this year? And then whether it's me or Leslie or yeah. Robbie, whoever's in the dugout reporter role that day. And I'm like, sure. So not just do you want to do it, but it's like, let me send you a detail of how this thing's going to work just to make sure we're all on the up and up. I'm like, it's just fucking home run pick. Like, you really don't have to like justify all the decisions and the draft order and who gets to go first. But it's
nothing.
Hilarious.
I'm the person who like gets excited checking things off the to-do list.
Yeah,
and okay. being organized.
And I am that way to an extent. I guess maybe I'm just a different. Mine's probably focused more toward kids and
yeah.
missing lunch.
You're a different stage in life,
right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But also too, you're also the guy that you know. I go to bed. We know Josh. So we're taping this the day after Josh Young's injury. We know it's not good. And so I wake up this morning at like, you know, 5:45 to a text of like four different scenarios. Like, here's what could possibly happen. You know, Foscue gets called up or blah, blah, this guy gets, Duffy gets, I mean, we're going, you had four different scenarios. And I'm just like, I haven't even thought about this. Like, I'm just now about to text Josh and ask him how he's doing. You know, but meanwhile, you've broken down four possible scenarios and like given them the likelihood of which one should happen anyway, but you are my go-to, you know, this, like, as far as, because I'm getting old, I'm getting, my brain's shrinking, I'm getting concussed and drinking too much wine. And so I do come to you for, cause you think of all those things, right?
Well, and I just want to say,
you let your brain go down that path. Whereas I'm like, just tell me when the move is made, and then I'll think about
it. Yeah, you don't have time to worry about the possibilities. After I sent that home run pick email, though, by the way, I got a kick out of your response, the reply all, this is the most Jared email ever.
It was so true.
You know what? You're right.
But it takes all kinds to make the world go round, and I feel like in every group of friends, and like for us as colleagues, it takes all different kinds. You know, in our little group, we've got, you know, a lot of different personalities, and I think we all balance each other out well. But your passion for the Rangers, your like the studying of the roster and the team and all of those things is unmatched, in my opinion, by anyone in our, you know, in our little realm. Where did that come from for you? I mean, you've always been a Rangers fan growing up here. You know, just kind of tell us about the evolution of your involvement with the organization, you know, no bigger than what transpired last year and what's carrying over into this season.
So I've always been a sports nut, not limited to baseball. And maybe some of that is a product of having older brothers who, like, I don't have memories of watching cartoons. I mean, I know I watched like Sesame Street a little bit, but like, I just want to hang out with my brothers. I didn't have control of the remote. They did. And so SportsCenter, and I would watch SportsCenter. This was back when it was like 30-minute SportsCenters, and they would rerun it like 5-6 times. At least that's my memory of it. I'd watch over and over and over. I would run out, get the newspaper, and I would read the box scores. Like I think I was advanced reading and math at an early age because of sports. I would read box scores. I knew what multiplication was because of sports stats. Averages helped me understand, like, but that was what I was always interested in. And it obviously evolved as I got older. I haven't lost any love for any of the other sports, but my professional focus has mainly been baseball. And I think because I am so type A, I think the numbers of sports have always been drawn to me. Cause with numbers, there are objective outcomes, right? I don't know why I took to baseball specifically, but I do love it and always have and can recognize, I don't know, you got two kids. You can look at Henry and Hattie and love the crap out of them, but also recognize like, hey, they need to be better at this or that or whatever. Like I know that baseball is a sport. It's not perfect. I know why there are fewer people who, like in my age range, who are like drawn to baseball than football or basketball. I still love it. And my first real exposure I mean, was fighting to stay up 10 more minutes to watch the first inning on TV growing up and then listening to Eric. I had a radio in my room. I didn't have a TV, so I'd fall asleep listening to Eric. And then eventually my high school basketball coach had a mutual friend with Josh Lewin and knew I was a huge sports fan. And I reached out to Josh Lewin over email a few times and finally had the courage to ask him if I could be his assistant for a summer, essentially was what it was. And he, unbeknownst to anyone else with the Rangers, hired me.
Right.
He told me, yeah, you can come. And he basically saw me as like an intern who would just do whatever he needed. But for me, it was great. I got to sit in the booth, got to know Tom Grieve, got to really develop my relationship with Eric. And Eric Nadel has been my foremost mentor since I was 18 at that time. And that has been, you know, it's been an incredibly fulfilling relationship personally. Professionally, it helped really get me going. And that's where I met John Blake, Rich Rice, Angie Swint, the people who are still with the Rangers who we work with to this day. And then, you know, I did the whole broadcasting in college minor league thing and then decided I wanted to move back to Dallas. I had done minor league baseball for 3 years. I wanted to roll the dice and move back to a big market. One of the appealing elements of that was getting to fill in and do Rangers pre and post. And I got to do like 5 or 6 pre and post. This was with 103.3 back when ESPN radio was still a thing in Dallas. And then that year, that my first year was the last year with 103.3. They switched over to The Fan, which is the Rangers have been with The Fan since 2015. And there was a contract dispute with my predecessor, Mike Peasley. And I work with Mike again, just being honest, like I struggled with that for a year knowing that like I got this dream job because someone else got screwed, which is essentially what happened. And the short of it is Mike was not able to get out of a contract that would have allowed him to move with the Rangers. I didn't have a contract.
Right.
The Rangers hired me and I've been with the Rangers ever since.
And so that first year was 14?
15.
15.
Yeah. 14 was the year I moved back and filled in.
Okay.
I was there when, you know, Wash abruptly
parted
ways with the organization. That was a rant, you know, weird day. The Yu Darvish near no-hitter against the Red Sox. But 15 was my first full year in this role.
Yeah. And it's increased, I feel like, over the years. And then last season with Eric, not – you know, being in a position mentally where he felt like he was, you know, prepared to broadcast. You've stepped in for him. You'll do that again this year, not to the same extent, but then also too now filling in on the TV side some for Dave Raymond. So can you kind of just take us through like, you know, what that was like for you last season? Because with you're talking about your mentor, as you've said, he's unable to go. You've got to step in. It had to have been a weird kind of juggling act for you.
Yeah, it was incredibly bittersweet. Like opening day was my first ever opening day doing play-by-play for a major league game. But I'm doing it because this person who is like an extension of family to me is going through something incredibly challenging. And in the early months of the regular season, it was like Eric was not in good shape. And then he slowly, like eventually he was showing progress. It was going to be a long road back, but like in April, we weren't seeing there wasn't really progress. And I would text Eric every day. I'd probably speak to him on the phone once a week. And finally mid to late April got to the point where, I'd either bring food over to his house, and hang out with him for a little bit, or we'd go to lunch. You know, Eric's been around, I mean, more than 4 decades, he's pretty recognizable. And he was hesitant to go out in public because he was not well and didn't want to have conversations with people and get caught off guard. And it was just, it was scary. But at the same time, I've got this opportunity professionally that like, I don't have a choice but to show up and, you know, try to do my best. And this is what I want to do. And so it was definitely bittersweet. But Eric made it way more sweet than bitter because Eric could have been back channeling to try and get back sooner than he needed to because he, you know, was threatened, or not that he should be threatened by me, but like, you know, there any right. any number of scenarios. Eric told me like before the season we had a call and he said, hey, don't worry about me. I'll be fine. I'm so proud of you. And that like that made it a little bit easier for me to enjoy it and yeah. to feel good about enjoying it and sharing it with him too. Because he, you know, Eric would text me all the time. He'd be listening or ask me questions. And then the team was good again, right? Yeah. I mean, we didn't know it was going to end up the way it did. But, like, we did know pretty early on, this team's going to do something it hasn't done since 2016, and that's compete for a playoff spot. And Eric's never, you know, had never won a World Series and had come up so close. And the fact that this team, which he had been waiting for years, had a chance to compete at that level, like, then it became, all right, gosh, now I feel guilty again. And didn't know. I don't think we knew. Eric came back in early August. I don't think we knew until about the All-Star break, which is mid-July, that he was going to come back. I think up until that point, some days you'd think, all right, yeah, he will be back. Other days, no shot. And so it was, you know, that part of it was tough. I'm so thankful that he is okay. And looking back, I mean, it was such an incredible experience. And I loved our group too. Like, getting to share it with Matt and Pease, and then you and Dave and CJ on the TV side. Like, it was so much fun getting to travel and do all that. And hopefully there's more of that in the future, but I'm happy that Eric's back. And I know that, you know, as a Rangers fan, I'm happy that Eric's back because he is such a big part of the Rangers fan experience.
So what is your, so do you have like a breakdown of, this is the number I'm doing pre and post, this is the number I'm doing radio play-by-play, this is the number I'm doing TV play-by-play?
So I'm supposed to do 10 TV, radio. So Eric will do 100 games. So that's 62 radio. And then Matt can take anywhere from 5 to 10 games off.
Okay.
So I will do anywhere from 67 to 72 radio, and then 10 on TV, and the rest will be pre and post.
So you don't miss a game.
Yeah, I will. Let's see. I missed one game last year for, Emily had a medical thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, there's no plans on missing a game this year. And not because anyone has said you can't miss games.
Right.
I don't know. There's a concert that Emily and I would like to go to because the artist is a guy named Noah Kahn. He's kind of newish on the scene, but we started listening to him before anyone, I say anyone, before a lot of people knew who he was, and he's kind of exploded. And I'm thinking of asking off for that, but
I just tell you absolutely. Should.
I know. Yep. I know.
For the love.
We've had these conversations, but yeah, I don't, and I don't have kids yet either. Right. So like, yeah. I think when that happens one day, like that could change the calculus of it all. But I do love it. I'm weird like that. There are times I would love a night off, right? You know, I miss something here for my friends. I will say, you know, I get out of a lot of stuff because of baseball too.
Which is it?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Weddings, in-law stuff, family stuff.
Couple showers.
Couple showers. And like the cool thing is too, and there's like this, yeah, the game starts at 7, but I got to be at the ballpark at 1 today. So this couple shower that starts at 11:30, like
yeah,
I just can't.
Too tight.
Yeah, it's not worth it going. Tight. So like, I do work pretty much every game.
Okay, you brought up the kids thing. You've been not super open, but you have talked about the, you know, you and Emily's desire to have children and the difficulty that you guys have experienced. To the extent that you're comfortable, you know, what kind of a challenge has that been? Do you feel encouraged by the way? Are you, you know, things have gone recently? Are you, you know, where are you? Because I know you've shared some of it on social media. So is Emily.
Yeah.
A lot of people wonder about that.
So we were going to, and one of the plans this offseason was for both of us to join you and Julian to talk about it. And then things took a turn and that just, I think we'll probably do it at some point
whenever
walk
ready.
Through. But like, that was the other part with last year. So I got my mentor and someone who's like another dad who's struggling, but then professionally things are great. But then personally on the fertility front, it was miserable.
Yeah.
And baseball in a lot of ways helped me. I don't want to say saved me, but helped me tremendously because it's every day and it was a distraction. You know, Emily, my wife, doesn't have the same luxury of that. Yeah, I mean, it sucks. Like I actually feel less hopeful today than I probably have in recent years, just because we have swung and missed twice with a surrogate after, so let's see, it all started in May of 2020. Emily got pregnant. It was our first time trying, thought, hey, this is going to be great. And then miscarried, and we found out through testing the fetus. I'm sorry if that's too graphic. Okay. They give you the option, and so you test, and thankfully we did, because we found out that Emily has a couple of chromosomal issues that would basically make having a kid naturally incredibly difficult. And so we went right to IVF with a doctor in Dallas. Didn't work out. Not the doctor's fault, just, you know, it's not a given. And then we switched our care to a doctor in Colorado, a clinic that is known. You know, there are people, I mean, you go to the waiting room, there are people from all over the country and even outside of the country who go there. I mean, it's our thought process was, hey, it didn't work locally. If we're going to keep doing this and it's not cheap, let's try being the best care. And they handle special cases, and Emily's is not a standard case. It would be considered a unique case or whatever. And so we were super hopeful then, right? Like, you know, there had always been a next step that, all right, well, this doesn't work, but there's this. And it didn't work on the IVF front. And then we tried surrogacy, thinking, all right, well, this is super expensive. Thankfully, you know, we're in a position to consider it, but all right, it should work, right? Surrogacy should work. I mean, we're taking Emily kind of out of the equation. Surrogacy, right. I had a funny conversation with Mark Folliwell, the Mavericks. He was confused what surrogacy was, because I told him at one point my sister-in-law volunteered to be our surrogate. He was kind of creeped out.
So he's thinking it's me and sister-in-law. Yeah.
Surrogacy is simply a person who is willing to carry the baby of, you know, I guess it could be anyone, but a couple.
Emily's eggs mixed with your sperm.
So it's our baby.
She's just carrying it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that, as recently as the first day of spring training, a month and a half ago, we found out the second surrogacy attempt did not work. So now we're in a position, we just don't know what we're doing next. There are a lot of different.
And you're exhausted.
Well, yes.
You're financially exhausted. You're emotionally exhausted.
Yes. Yeah. I'm tired of having to make decisions, you know, financially for, you know, what would be best for all the possibilities that are still there. Like, it's not easy on a relationship. Like, I'm so thankful that we are still married, because we both will say that, like, we both acknowledge that it could have go a really bad way and we'd have no reason for it other than just the stresses of what we've gone through. She is, I mean, she has to, in a lot of ways, because of baseball, do this on her own. I mean, we have found out on three different occasions that a baby was lost, or a transfer did not work, or something within an hour first pitch of a broadcast. And I've had to go on and do it while she, you know, thankfully is surrounded by my family and her family to go over it. But, like, I mean, it's a shitty feeling as a husband. Like, I'm working so that to provide for a family. I love doing this, but, like, you know, I get paid a game rate right now because I'm not a full time everyday play by play guy. So if I were to miss a game, that's money I'm losing, right? Yeah. And so, it's shitty. I feel like I don't know. I have very mixed feelings. I know that I'm working my ass off for our family and to put us in this position. But I also know that she's doing a lot of this alone, and I hate that.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of the job I chose, I guess. But yeah, it's been incredibly challenging. I guess I'm kind of venting at this point.
No, I mean, it sucks.
It sucks.
And I will say, like, even, I mean, and I can only speak from a woman's perspective, but when Mike and I couldn't get pregnant with Henry, and it was like, it's like, you feel like, as a woman, you're like, this is like the most womanly thing. Like, this is like a basic woman thing. Like, I should be able to get knocked up, right? Like, I should be able to have a baby. Like, God made me this way. Like, I'm supposed to be able to do this. And so when you can't, you feel like it's just the one thing that I want. It's the one thing that, like, all the other things pale in comparison to this one, this desire to be a mother. Yeah. And to, you know, to in to an extent, to carry that child, to all those things. And so to go through that, what she's been through, what you guys have been through. As
no, but it's her more, like, we went to a wedding in Mexico.
Which is also known as a medding.
Yeah, a medding.
A Mexico wedding.
And I had been told that, hey, for like therapeutic reasons, write how you feel. And Emily and I were not sitting next to one another because of the seat situation. And so I felt good about, like, I didn't want to type stuff out in front of her and have her think about it. And so she was the row in front of me. And for 3 hours, I just typed. And I typed, I think, like 20,000 words on how I felt. And some of it is about how, like, as a guy, you know, there are challenges that, yeah, you know, the concern and the care is on the woman, and it should be, but, like, basically, like, guys, don't be afraid to speak up too. Like, if you're, but
100%, it's hard on y'all too.
But I say all that to say this, like, this is like, it is a million times harder on her. And the fact that, and I tell people this all the time, I wish it was my issues. I wish, yeah, the reason we were having problems, but they're not. And,
yeah,
and it's just the matter of fact, her medical challenges are why we're in this spot. I don't blame her.
Right.
I'm just saying, but because of that, it makes it even harder on her.
And isn't it crazy the way they do that in the very beginning? Because you figure out very early. Like, I remember whenever we figured out that probably I was going to have a little bit of a hard time, we didn't know if it was me or if it was Mike. And so when you go to a fertility doctor, one of the first things that they do is they look at you, and then they need to look at your husband too. And I remember Mike, like, fucking spiking the ball. Like, he was so happy. Like, my shit's strong and it's swimming upstream and it's healthy and there's so much of it. And I'm like, okay, which was fine. We laughed about it in the beginning. It's so early in the process that you can laugh at it. I mean, now you're 3-4 years into this, you're like, there's no more fucking laughing anymore.
Yeah, no, the joy out of the entire process is no longer existent. And the night before the Tampa series, or was it we were in the hotel bar in Tampa.
Okay.
Right? ALD, yeah. Right?
Yes, yes.
And you went to the bathroom, and so I quickly called my wife, and we had found out the day we left for Tampa that she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Not planned, natural, not supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you walked behind me and heard me say something to Emily that, like, I didn't realize you were behind me. And so there's no way around it. Like,
right,
we're talking like a week or 2 weeks pregnant. Like, no, you would never tell someone at that point. But, like, you couldn't unhear what you heard.
Right.
So you were kind of my go-to throughout the postseason, riding the roller coaster. But, like, there was no joy a part of that process, and it did not end favorably, and we didn't necessarily expect it to, because we were aware of the challenges of a natural pregnancy and not working. But, like, no point in the process anymore is fun.
Do you ever get I'm sure you're so terrified. You can't get excited about anything.
No. Yeah. Not, and for her, she feels like she's a burden, and she's not. But I understand why she feels that way. Because amongst our closest friends, you can't hide when you're doing IVF, the people who somehow hide it, like, I don't know, you are lying out of your ass all the time. Because, like, for Emily, the amount of medication she had to take, the strict schedule, like, you can't just live your life freely. And so you either are constantly bailing on your friends,
mm-hmm,
oddly leaving at random times. Like, mm-hmm, it's just easier to tell them, hey guys, this is what we're going through. That makes that part of it easy. What makes it tough is that now they know. And because they know, out of the goodness of their heart, they want updates.
Yeah.
And when you're constantly not delivering good news, you feel like your friendship is equipped with a gray cloud that is following you at all times.
Yeah.
And no matter how much your friends care and understand or want to understand, doesn't change the fact that, like, no one likes being around someone who is constantly the bearer of bad news, even if it's not their fault. It's just like,
And even
human
if it's
nature.
Not their bad news.
Right.
It's, yeah.
So it's just, there are a lot of elements to this. And I could step on her toe and you would think that like World War III was breaking out. Like, I don't know that Emily's got the physical toughness to play through an injury. She wasn't an athlete. Like, she's without question the toughest person I know, because I see every day what she goes through mentally and physically. And for her to be standing and not have gone any number of directions is just like awe-inspiring to me.
Yeah.
Like, I want to fight for, I mean, I want this for us, but I want this for her.
Yeah.
More than anything.
I know. I want it for you guys too. Well, wait, I didn't intend for you to go as deep as you did, but I'm glad that you did. I think it's terribly beneficial for people, especially who aren't familiar with, you know, the struggles and the hardship that infertility presents. I mean, it's crazy. And I mean, I only had to do it one time. I did it one time with Henry and, you know, didn't even have to do it with Hattie. So I feel like we were so extremely lucky. But yeah, I'm pulling for you guys in the biggest
way. No, I appreciate it. And I'll say this, like, at some point, Emily and I both, we do want to come on here and maybe talk more in detail. And
yeah,
we
like the whole ramifications of the anti-abortion stuff and all that, like, that affects your eggs and your, like, it's way deeper than people.
Right. That's the first time in my life that like a political thing has like truly directly impacted me.
Yeah.
But we want to somehow turn this into like a situation where we are serving others who are going through this. And we're not, Emily's actually in the works and starting something, and I'm trying to figure out how to use my platform. But I'll say this, if anyone listening knows someone or wants to be put in touch or whatever to, you know, for advice or questions, first thing I'll say is our experience is not like anyone else's, and no one else, like, not.
There's
not,
no two there's experiences no,
yeah,
that
yeah.
are the same.
So I will never speak to someone like, hey, this is how it's, you know. But even if it's just listening and hearing things out or whatever, if anyone listening, both Emily and I would obviously be more than happy to talk to people.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, we're more than happy to talk to people, but there might be a day where we're like, we don't want to talk about it. Right. And that's the other thing too, is I don't know when I wake up, if I turn on the TV and the first thing I see is a scene in a TV show of a dad having a blast with his son.
Yeah.
I can't tell you for sure how I'm going to process that. And same with Emily, right? And that's the other shitty thing. It's like everywhere you turn, they're kids.
Yeah.
And we love kids. I got two nephews and two nieces. Emily's like a great aunt to them. I love your kids. I love Dave's kid. You know, like, but there's certain days where it's just like you have to hide it or fight it. Or like with some of my best friends who got babies, right? Like, I've always dreamed of, like, I want to be the best Uncle Jared to my best friend's kids. And there are days when I'm gritting my teeth and days I don't show up to certain things. And then there are days where it's like, hey, it's great.
Right.
You just don't know. And that's the other thing that's tough, is that kids are inescapable. And so like it is in your mind 24/7.
Yeah. And then too, when you hear about a girlfriend that is pregnant, and then those feelings of being happy for them, but you're happy for them, obviously, but then you're like, God, why can't I? Why can't I? I want to be. What's a girl got to do to get knocked up?
You go through stages. You know? So, like, I see it through Emily. The initial stage is like another person's pregnant.
Yeah.
And then it's like, then you are. Sorry, I should say your first stage is happy.
Yeah.
The first stage is happy. Then it's like, oh, but you know, now it's another one of my friends is, you know, pregnant and whatever, and I got to hear about it. And then it's like, it's this defiance of like, it's okay that I'm not super thrilled because of what I'm going through. And then it goes to, I'm the worst person in the world because someone I care about is pregnant. And like, my initial reaction was like how it impacts me, but I don't.
Those are completely and totally normal human reactions.
Right.
She is a normal human being.
No, it's
it would be crazy if she didn't feel like that, if you didn't feel like that. I mean, that wouldn't, I think it speaks to your deep desire to have children and for you guys to have them together and on, you know, as much as on your own as you can. But you know, I mean, it'll, y'all are both faithful people. I know that it will work out, you know, in some way. I'm not going to say the way it's supposed to because it's already hasn't worked out the way it's supposed to for you guys.
We know we'll be parents.
Yeah.
You know, one way or another.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are people, have you thought about adoption?
Yes,
we have. Yes. All right.
But there is something about it being a part of you and a part of her and you wanting that. And that's very understandable. Yeah. I mean, that's the way, Mike and I had that conversation early on. Like, you know, we didn't have to get too far down that road, obviously. But yeah.
The world needs more maniacal, type A, schedule, obsessive people.
Obviously.
So.
Obviously.
I'm just trying to do the Lord's work.
I feel like we should talk a little Rangers and sports. Want to remind people before we talk a little bit of sports and wrap this thing up because we've gone long. I didn't mean to keep you so long. But but you've got to be out of here pretty quickly. Right?
I'm good right now.
Okay. Yeah. Want to remind everyone to check. Have you been to Epic Waters?
Yes.
Water park?
The water park. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
They're a good friend of Sandlot.
So. Okay. Yeah. Well, they're a good friend of the Mom Game.
There you go.
They're also nominated for like the best water park in the United States. So if you get a chance, or even if you don't get a chance, make a chance. Go to our Instagram page. We've got some posts there telling you how you can vote for Epic Waters for the best indoor water park in the country. Head to their website also, or their Instagram, social, whatever. It's Epic Waters GP, right, Ash? Is that right?
Yes.
Epic Waters GP. Anyway, they're a huge partner of ours. We love them so much. So go vote for them for the best indoor water park in the whole United States of America.
I'm going to go vote right now.
Go vote. Thank you for voting.
It's on the Mom Game Instagram page?
I think go to their Instagram page.
Story. On the story. Okay. All right.
I just got a message from Elvis Andrews.
Wow.
He changed his number.
His cell phone number.
Yeah, he just changed his number.
All right.
Should I ask him if he's retiring for sure?
Yeah. Let's break that news live on the mic. Have you not? You should
I
get
haven't.
Him to...
I've been giving him a little bit of a time. You know, I love... Did you...
This is
riveting.
This is what happens when you're doing a... podcast with an A-list celebrity because she just talks to all her A-list celebrity friends.
Okay, let's talk. So go vote for Epic Waters. Let's talk a little sports. Let's start with Josh. So I said, I know you texted me last night because I thought, okay, it's not good, but it's not. Maybe it doesn't have to be terrible. First of all, the dude he hit three dudes in a row. What are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And is it mate? It's Maton, right?
Phil Maton, yeah.
That's what I was listening to. And I love all radio stations. I'm on the
I think I know what you're about to
love
say.
Love the fan. I was listening. Did you hear Sean Bass today?
Oh, no.
No, he was calling him Maton, Baton. And I was like, have I been saying this wrong the whole time? I think it's Maton.
I feel obligated based on who might be listening to let you know that if you want the best baseball coverage, you can tune into 105.3 The Fan.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You plug all the radio. Yeah, I love all the radio.
No,
stations.
I know. I love
a big
all the
fan of all the stations.
Yes, Phil Maton, former Astro.
Hit three dudes.
Yeah. And like the bizarre thing is like Josh technically swung at that pitch because he was trying to get out of the way. So
I know.
Hit batter. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of absurd,
but I didn't think so. He hit a Dolly too, which Dolly, I think Dolly's just like, he's like unbreakable. Like he's made of like black box material in an airplane. Right.
Yeah.
Like he's just kind of indestructible.
He gets hit by a lot of pitches in that hand wrist area and knock on.
Did you see his strawberry on his calf?
Yes. After the stolen base.
It's this long.
Yeah.
It looks so painful. Anyway, so you're texting me about Josh. I'm like, is it that bad? And then you're like, it's bad. Fractured wrist. I'm like, damn it. So I text Josh this morning. And I'm like, how we doing? He's like, I'm hurting. And I was like, I'm so sorry. He was like, you know, sucks. And I'm like, hang in there. So surgery today or tomorrow soon. 6 to 8 weeks. He's not injury prone. Stop saying he's injury prone. He's not pulling fucking muscles.
Yeah, Coop. Chuck Cooperstein, I love you, but he's not injury prone.
He's getting beamed with 90-mile-an-hour pitches. Like, come on. Yeah. He's not injury prone. He's not tweaking, you know.
I feel so badly for
him. I mean, I guess the calf is a little whatever.
No, but that's an early spring training. Everyone shows up to spring training.
And yeah, but no, you're not getting hit by pitches and you're injury prone.
Right.
It's just not the way it works.
You know Josh better than I do, but... He wants to be great, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, there are guys, and I don't fault them because they work their tail off to make a living for their family, but there are guys out there who I think, yeah, if I could be great, that's awesome, but hey, I'm a Major League Baseball player. I'm happy.
Yeah.
Josh Jung wants to be great, and it's really tough to be great when you're not on the field, and that's not a knock on him. That's the reality of, like, you know, he is – these bad luck, bad break events are getting in the way of Josh doing what he has busted his ass to try and do.
Yeah,
and I hate
this
that for
is
him.
Not a situation – so he – I remember before his very first injury when he was in – what I can't remember what it was – in the minor leagues.
In the minor, yeah.
And he told me at that point in time, the only time he's ever, like, been under anesthesia, ever had surgery, was when he had his wisdom teeth taken out. He's like, this is so foreign to me that, you know, any type of injury, he hasn't had them. And so, but to get it now back to back to back, I mean, just to get it, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It, like, sucks.
Yeah, he did end of last year. All right. Then plays, yeah, you know, postseason and got all that. And then literally shows up spring training. Calf thing, not a big deal, but because it's spring training, they're going to slow play it. And then he, you know, busts his tail to be back for opening day, gets off to a great start. You know, this is going to be the year. It's like, you know, guys have great first full seasons, but can you do it again? And, like, you know, I don't think anyone internally had any doubts about that, but this was the year where Josh could really establish himself. Plus, you know, I was thinking about too, I don't know if this, like, matters, and I don't want to make him out to be this, like, I'm all about myself individual accomplishment guy, because he's not. The winning part is first for him, but, like, the All-Star game's in Arlington. And if he stays with the Rangers for a long time, this would be his only chance to ever play. You know what I mean? It's just like all these little things, and it gets in the way of that. And the Rangers are going to be fine. They dealt with this last year. If the Rangers are going to be a good team, like we all believe they are going to be, then this is going to happen. They got to deal with it. I just feel badly for Josh. And Bruce Bochy said, you know, yesterday, he was kind of down in the dumps, and it seems like, you know, woke up this morning down in the dumps, and I don't blame him. I mean, it sucks.
Yeah, he's pissed. But, you know, it's like better for it to happen now.
Yep.
Better for, you know, him to have time to recover in time for a postseason run or stretch run, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it does stink. Yeah. It sucks. Okay, anything else? Like, we talked about Josh. The team's off to a good start.
You know that the Rangers won the World Series?
I heard that. I'm familiar. We should talk about that before we get last thing to discuss. We didn't get our rings because they're not in yet. So the players got their rings, tier one, basically. Yeah. And it's not like, you're the one who told me about the tiers. I don't even know where I got it.
I don't know if you got that from me.
Did I make that up? Maybe I just made
No, there are tiers. I was made aware of that, but I don't know that I
told me.
Yeah.
Well, so I think all of tier one may have gotten their rings. So I think that was obviously priority number one, as it should be. And then tier two and tier three will get theirs at a later time. And I think it's when we're on the road.
In Detroit.
So we will get ours when we get back, I guess. We still don't know what tier we are. I'm hoping we slide in at tier two.
I'd like to be a tier two.
I mean, I feel
recipient.
Like, yeah, I think so. But
I don't want to. Yeah, I don't want to alienate anyone. I don't.
No.
But I'd like two. I just love the number two.
I do too. It's right in the middle.
Michael Young, when he first came up, I think wore two before he switched to 10.
Okay. Michael Young, who's your favorite?
He was my favorite Ranger. Yeah. There are two of us here.
There are.
And then if you multiply us two here and then Ashley there, two times one is
still
two.
Okay.
The Rangers are trying to win their second World Series this year. I just think twos are great. There are two people in a relationship, you and Mike.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, there are two of you, like husband, wife.
Yep.
Emily and I, same thing.
Okay.
Certain states, it might be more than two, but for us,
here,
it's two.
I got two kids.
You got two kids. I don't have two kids.
At this point. I think we're stretching, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm hoping for tier two.
Three is
a great
number
two. You're trying really hard on this one, but that's okay. Tier two it is.
Tier two.
Yeah.
I told Emily we were going to try to get you on tier one, and she told me that's too much work.
No, it's too much work in tier one.
Yeah. You don't want to. I don't want to get paid millions of dollars to win it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would have its perks for sure to be in tier one, but
Hey, but do you still, I know you and I are on the same page, like, and I've learned a lot from you about just
life in general.
Like, yeah, no, yes. But I still look at those guys and I think, like, I am so thankful for all of you because I didn't hit a pitch. I didn't throw a pitch. Like,
100%.
I genuinely mean it when I tell people, like, those guys worked their ass off.
No and, effing question.
And not just those guys, but, like, I think of, like, Bobby Bandolo and Adam Brenner. And
yes.
They, like, the support staff, they don't get the spotlight. Like, those people worked their asses off so that we could have the experience of a lifetime.
Yeah, for sure. And, well, I mean, and they're you know, I mean, the players get there early, but you're talking about guys in their hotel rooms fucking crunching numbers and putting together videos and doing whatever they need, scouting reports, all that stuff to provide the information to the coaching staff. Yeah, there's a lot of people that make that thing run. And so people, like, will make fun of, oh, you got to get out the nutritionist and the massage therapist. And, like, F you. Those are important part. Like, it is a whole, you know, ecosystem that's in place to get those guys ready to perform at their highest level, which they obviously did better than anyone last season. So don't be clowning the visiting clubhouse manager or the, you know, assistant clubhouse manager or any, you know, video court. Don't be clowning any of those people. They all serve a very important role into what goes on to make those guys' job as it's never easy, but as seamless as possible.
Yeah. I'm just so
day
grateful.
In and day out. Yeah. Super. I mean, are you kidding? Super grateful. I'm grateful to their wives who, like, make shit happen at home so those guys don't have to worry about a damn thing when they're at the ballpark. Like, all those things. Like, don't question for one second that's all not a huge part of why those guys were able to play the way they were.
I gotta ask you one question. I need truth serum here. So during the playoffs, we, like, were in some ways, like, attached to the hip, like planes. We'd sit next to each other. We'd vent to each other about certain things. But, like, for me, you are away from kids and Mike, and you're having to watch, you know, games on what, Game Changer, is that what it's called? Yep. Like, it's probably, like, I know you're having the time of your life, but I mean, the postseason is tiring because it's also stressful and everything.
Yes.
How, like, my Emily asked me this question. Like, you need to, it's okay if you don't sit next to Emily, like, on this flight. Like, she's probably tired of you. And I'm like, how tired did you get it? Because, like, I know me, right? Like, I know you love me. We are super close. I still am not sure. Like, people ask me, like, you're not like my mom. You're kind of more like my sister, but, like, you're,
I think,
like,
I'm like your cool aunt.
I was going to say cool sister.
Cool cousin, cool sister.
Well, you're the same age as my oldest brothers.
Okay.
So, like,
okay. All right. But, like, I'll take that.
You do, like, offer, like, motherly advice. So I guess, big, but whatever.
Okay.
I know our relationship is, but, like, I can, like, it is not. I don't know that I'd want to spend as much time with me as you did.
No, I never got tired of you. The only time I would, when you would start to get a little antsy when we lined up. That was the only time I was like, it's going to just take it down a notch. Everything's going to be fine.
Me? You were the one that were like, Miss Superstitious. Like, I can't do this. Or say that.
Right. Right. So I was like, I'm just going to wait because I didn't want to get in the tunnel because I didn't want to jinx anything because I had such a big part into what was going on the field. But, like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there was just a little.
I get it. No, it's nerve wracking.
So that's the only time I was just kind of like, everything's going to be fine. And then when was it? I was doing, like, something. We were in the tunnel and you went nuts a little bit and kind of lost it. And I was like, whoa.
Like, in a good way, right?
Oh, in a great way.
Yeah.
Was it in Houston? I think it was in Houston. It
might have been in Houston. Yeah, I don't remember.
It was a close game.
There was one and you were like, you, like, kind of gave me, like, the settle down.
It's going to be,
like,
okay.
The relax. It was cool, though.
We had a blast.
Well, people asked me about, like, where were you when they won?
Looking under seats at Chase Field.
It was. I thought it was really cool because I know how much you've put into this organization and people. And, like, I really, like, the people part of it is huge. That's, like, the separator, right? That's why I think, you know, it when you're around the team, like, you understand the emotions of it because you understand, you see it through the people that you've, you know. I thought it was cool that I got to, if I wasn't able to be in the booth with Eric and Matt, it was cool that I got to stand next to you because I know everything you've been through with this team, right? Yep. And so that was something that I thought was really cool because we were standing right next to each other. Yep. And we kind of looked at each other when Marcus hit the home run, like, holy crap, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
There was no thought of like, oh, you can't say because of a jinx. We just like, no. You knew. It was.
At that point, we were like, holy shit, here we go.
We're 3 outs away. Like, this is happening. The Rangers are about to win the World Series.
Oh, so amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Jay, thanks so much for being with us. This was so fun. I hope it was worth the wait.
Thanks for intentionally skipping out on lunch with your bosses.
I mean, I did not do that. I don't want to get in trouble. They still haven't texted me back.
Oh.
I know. I apologize profusely, and it just crickets. Yeah, maybe I'll have a job on Monday.
Well, maybe you'll get your ring because you won't be in Detroit then.
Maybe. Good point.
There you go.
Okay. Positive All spin. Right. Well, this was fun. Whenever Emily's ready to come back on, but I kind of want y'all to wait until like you can come and bring a baby with you.
Okay.
Like let's work on that.
Might be a while, but
that's
good. Okay.
That's all right. We're not going anywhere. Okay. I mean, Julie may have abandoned us, but
she's got some more meddings.
I'm here.
Mexico trips.
Yes, some meddings, Mexico trips. But I'm here for the duration. So anyway, we're gonna end the show next week. I'm not even sure. Julie will be back. I have no idea what else we have going on. But in the meantime, Jared, you have to look at your camera, put down your phone, look at your camera.
Oh.
And then on the count of three, you say, throw up the peace signs. We're super hip here. And you say, mom game out. 1, 2, 3.
Mom game out.
The Mom Game is proud to partner with local GEICO offices, Victoria Elliott, proudly serving your local community.